This is the Goalkeepers Union podcast.
Hello and welcome to the Goalkeepers Union podcast. Between the Sticks, me, Matt Beadle, here with the spotifiable voice of goalkeeping, Richard Lee.
Good morning, Matthew. How are you?
Not too bad, Richard. Not too bad at all. I've actually just watched you do another interview on the Fozcast, which we spoke about before, and now your interview has been completed. It is live on Spotify. A little bite-sized snippet on YouTube too. You're there for everyone to see, mate.
There you go. Even gave you a mention. How does that feel?
Yes, you did. You did. Although it's quite funny when you mention your mates or the people that you work with, because you almost go, you're brilliant at talking about goalkeeping. And that podcast was excellent. I thought you articulated yourself very well. But there was a moment when it's almost like you think, I need to mention people. I have to remember to mention people. And then you seem to just freeze and you mess it all up. Yeah, Matt Beadle with the Goalkeepers podcast. The Goalkeepers podcast. What is that?
I get nervous because I know this time in particular, and again, I'll let everyone know this. I did the first one, which I really enjoyed. And I suppose you go on there and I'm so conscious of wanting to come across in the right way when I'm talking about goalkeeping, and you're asked certain questions, and you, especially in the position that we're in, you don't want to trip up because, again, doing what we do, we're very close to a lot of players, a lot of clubs, so you've got to be a little bit careful. So I think I'm so focused on not tripping up that I forget key things. So I remember I came out of the first one and like felt good. It was a good chat, good interview. And then I suddenly thought, you know what? I've not mentioned anybody that I work with or anybody around me. It just looks like I'm a one-man band. I'm taking all the credit. And so I kind of knew once it came out, I know you boys were good about it, but obviously a little bit of stick. So I was thinking this time, right, really got to mention the team that works with us. I've got such an amazing team. So really got to mention the team. And so the whole time I'm thinking, when they're asking a question, how can I mention them? And I think I even said, oh, and I've got to mention Scott, Sam and Matt.
Yeah, you did.
I've got to mention. Yeah. And I even said it. And as I said it, I'm like, I could feel myself as I said it and then losing my train of thought. But I did manage to crowbar it in there just about.
I did chuckle. But mate, yeah, very good. How was the experience as a whole? It's a lovely studio, isn't it?
Yeah, really good. Really good. I mean, they've got obviously a great thing going on there, and obviously a slightly different feel to us in terms of the nature of the podcast. And yeah, I mean, Ben, I think he smashed it, and they've smashed it in terms of what they're looking to do. And just high energy, like I say, lovely studio, the way the whole thing's set up, a lot of guys that are working there now as well. And I think just naturally the way that Ben is, you know, he's such high energy all the time. It does lead to to a good conversation. You know, again, you could probably learn a thing or two from our friend Ben.
How many guys are working there then? What's the setup? Have they got production? Have they got guys filming?
Yeah, there's a few. So you they're based right in the center of Leamington actually, and you go up to the top floor and they've got three or four different rooms now. So they've kind of got three or four guys that are working in, I suppose, the main production studio. And then you go through into where the Fozcast is. And I want to say there were three people at all times kind of behind the scenes. They've got the various cameras set up. So they've got all the cameras rolling at all times. And of course, they cut it up thereafter. And obviously, when I watched it back, you know, they quite nicely put in different stats or different pictures and kind of break the podcast up. But yeah, the actual studio itself is really, really nice. I know we spoke about this quite a bit because I know at some point we will likely move this or maybe grow this and maybe be on YouTube or whatever else. But I think like we've discussed before, if we're going to do it, we need to do it properly. So we would want to have a studio. Now, that's not overly easy when I'm in Dubai quite often and you're in the UK. I mean, we're going to have to try and create like a matching studio.
Yeah, 5 years into the Goalkeepers Union podcast, we really should get a studio. Yeah, we really should. To be fair, that is how we started, if you remember. We kind of started high and then we've gradually sort of come down the ladder.
This is true. That was a nice studio, actually. We got some good footage from that. But no, we will progress back to that at some point, I'm sure.
Absolutely. Okay, on with the show.
Let's do it.
So, no better place to start than Goodison Park. Everton 0, Arsenal 1. But we're not going to talk too much about the action. Oh no, we are going to talk about the hot goalkeeping topic that is set to change goalkeeping, the shape of goalkeeping, from here until evermore. Or is it? David Raya in for Aaron Ramsdale. Now, as things stand, Arsenal play PSV on Wednesday in the Champions League. They've then got Spurs at the weekend. So there's only a certain level of this argument that we can go to because we don't know who is going to play in those next two fixtures. But let me quickly read out the comments, which a lot of people have already heard from Mikel Arteta after the game at the weekend regarding this situation. So he said, it's the same rationale that Fabio Vieira played or Eddie Nketiah played instead of Gabriel Jesus. I haven't had a single question on why Jesus hasn't started and he's won more trophies than anyone, including me, in that dressing room. I cannot have two players like this in one position and not play them. David has tremendous qualities like Aaron has, like Carl Hein has, but we have to use them. He then went on to talk about how he wanted to change a goalkeeper during a game before, but didn't do it. I didn't have the courage to do it, he said, but I'm able to take a winger, a striker or a central defender or to drop to a five and hold that result. We drew those games and I was so unhappy. Why? Why not change the keeper? We have all the qualities in another goalkeeper to do something when something is happening and you want to change momentum. Do it. Now my feeling is to get everybody engaged in the team. They have to play regardless of the competition. We have to do it.
Yeah. Right, do you know what? And I've thought about this far too much in the past few days because we did actually speak about this a little bit on the Fosscast, and this was obviously prior to David Rea going in. Ben fielded a bit of a scenario like this where effectively goalkeepers would be considered in the same way that outfield players are considered, and maybe you'd swap players during games depending on how the game was going, etc., etc. And so I'm wary of, I suppose, coming across as old school with this in that, you know, my mindset towards it at the moment is still the same in that I think the top teams ordinarily have their one. We've spoke a lot about your Liverpools, Man Cities and Man United over the year where very much you've got your number one and teams that have gone on to be successful. Edison will pretty much play every Premier League game other than injury, sending off or whatever else. I do wonder, and again, this will be something that it'll probably be 10 years' time, 5 years' time, we look back and think, wow, we were so old school. You know, if suddenly goalkeepers are in or out and there's not a stigma attached to a goalkeeper coming off in a game. Because, you know, I still remember like classic examples of where a goalkeeper maybe has been substituted at halftime. I think Rychubka was, and I spoke to him the other day, and I remember that being one in that it was such a big thing at the time that it had a bit of a tough first half from memory and the manager swapped him at half time, and it was such a big thing because you do not do that, or certainly that's the way that we see it. You do not do that. Now, at the same time, I say that, and I think back to personal experience. There was a couple of games where I wasn't having a good game, and again, all goalkeepers will have experienced this, where you know nothing seems to be going right. You might feel good, but your kicking's off, your timing's off. You just don't quite feel with the game, and it probably would have made sense to substitute me in those games, you know. But the issue with that as well is that I know that if I put my hand up and say, look, take me off, I'm not feeling great today, I'm probably not going to start the next one. So of course you'd never do that as a goalkeeper, because you just try and get through the game and then focus on the next game. But for the best of the team, in that moment where I wasn't having my best day and wasn't feeling fantastic, it might have made sense to make that change. But again, I go back to that stigma. If that happens, it's a big story. Realistically, I don't start the next game. So it just kind of is what it is in the goalkeeping fraternity. So I can see this from both sides in that, you know, from Mikel Arteta's point of view, and I've heard a few people give this opinion in that, why can't it be the same as every other position? The truth is, at the moment, it just isn't. But then maybe it takes someone to make it that way. You know, if suddenly it starts being that Rea plays a few, Ramsdale plays a few, and it's not based on one playing a bad game and then coming out. It is just based on, you know, we're moving things around. Maybe it becomes more part of the norm. But again, I say that, and I go back to all the successful teams that we've seen in years gone by. They normally have that number one because it is a different position to others, and that it's more about consistency. It's about building that relationship with your back four, your back five, you know, being as solid as you can possibly be. And again, the physical exertion of a goalkeeper is very different to the physical exertion of an outfield player. So yeah, I'm really, really intrigued to see where this goes.
There really is so much to unpack here, isn't there? And like you say, this is new. Is it because simply we are used to it? Is this the new thing? Will we in 10 years' time turn around and just perceive this as the norm? Because I was reading a good article, or a few articles on this yesterday, as I imagine most of the listeners were too, about innovation and how that is often received with some form of skepticism. One example in an article I read was the guy who lies behind the wall at a free kick. Now, when that started, everyone thought, that's a bit odd. That looks a bit different. That will never catch on. It was something of a gimmick. Now, it's absolutely the norm that we see in every single game. So will this be the norm in goalkeeping? Because we are potentially at the beginning of radical change in the goalkeeping landscape in terms of how the position is dealt with by clubs and managers. And we're already seeing it, right? So in the Premier League, Sam Johnston and Dean Henderson. You've got Jason Steele, who came in for Brighton at the weekend for Bart Verbruggen, which is exactly what Roberto De Zerbi said he was going to do. 50% of Premier League games they would share. You could argue at Nottingham Forest, Matt Turner and Odysseas Vlachodimos, who has come in from Benfica and will expect to be that number one. We've mentioned it many times in the Championship. Ian Melier and Carl Darlow at Leeds. George Long played 40-odd games for Millwall last season. He's now in at Norwich to compete with Angus Gunn for that number one spot. And then if you look over history at Barcelona, you had Marc-Andre Ter Stegen and Claudio Bravo. They both battled for that number one spot. PSG, Donnarumma and Keylor Navas. Navas crops up quite a few times in these examples, to be fair, because then at Madrid, you had Thibaut Courtois and Keylor Navas. You can even go back to Courtois and his time at Chelsea in one season where he battled with Petr Cech. Now, in that instance, of course, Cech moved on to Arsenal. Navas, in both of those instances, at Real Madrid, moving to PSG, and then PSG going on loan to Nottingham Forest because he wasn't happy with this situation. And also in the Championship, you've got Matty Ingram and Ryan Alsop at Hull. And I'm mentioning this because Liam Rossini was asked about the fact that Mikel Arteta had swapped David Raya and Aaron Ramsdale. And he said that he might actually consider it. And one of the points he made, which I thought was very interesting, was that being a goalkeeper, according to him now, is more mentally taxing, hence that justification.
Yeah, Johnson and Henderson can throw in there as well. And no, look, and this is why I'm really wary as to what I say now, because I think that exactly that. I remember another good example was when the side volley first came. And I remember seeing someone do it for the first time and just thinking, just being fancy. Like, why not just do a normal volley or a half volley? You know, a half volley was the one back then. You know, a lovely little half volley out to the winger or over the top. And now, all of a sudden, nobody, literally nobody does the half volley, or very few, or it's, you know, yeah, really rare occasion. So, yeah, exactly that. You know, talking about innovation, I do wonder if we're sat here in time and it just is, there isn't necessarily that one and two, there isn't that stigma about being the one, being the two, both know they're going to get game time, unless there is that real clear number one. I don't know. And again, whether it's more of a, because a lot of the examples you gave where there's foreign managers in place, I know Notts Forest isn't necessarily the case, but certainly where you've got a Mikel Arteta and a few of the examples you mentioned in Europe, I think there's a slightly different culture and a slightly different idea that sits around goalkeeping in different places. So again, I'm going to watch it from afar and I'm intrigued to see how it plays out. But there is a part of me that does think this will just become the norm. The goalkeeping culture, the goalkeeping standard, the way in which it's always been, won't be the way in which it always is. So, yeah, I think for now I'm sitting on the fence to an extent because my gut says that the Raya-Ramsdale combination won't last that long. I think one of them does move on. And I think still with the idea being as it is, that, you know, Raya wants to be Spain's number one, Ramsdale wants to be England's number one, I get the impression at some point they're both going to want to be outright number ones for an entire season and cup games and whatever else. But who knows? If we're sat here talking in 3 years' time and Raya and Ramsdale are still at Arsenal, then I'll certainly hold my hands up and say I was wrong.
You mentioned the nationalities as well there. We've got, you know, the Euros in the summer, which Aaron Ramsdale and David Raya are both want to be, both going to want to be in contention for. So that's another topic, isn't it? But all in all, he did have a very solid game, Raya, too. We should make sure that we say that. And I don't like the comparisons. We've seen many graphics of Raya and Ramsdale and their performance last season, those comparisons. I don't think we can pay too much attention to that because they were playing in different teams with relatively different styles. But in terms of an opposition to bed in your first game, Everton, who, let's face it, are not very good at the moment. I don't think Raya could have asked for a better start to his Arsenal career, and he did play very well, which is what you would expect from a goalkeeper of his calibre. But we mentioned the fixtures coming up for Arsenal, PSV on Wednesday in the Champions League, and then the North London derby at the weekend. And then in October, Arsenal face City, Chelsea, Sevilla, Sheffield United, and then going into November, Newcastle and Sevilla again in the Champions League. If we are going to get a feel for what Mikel Arteta really wants to do this season, we'll get it after that run of games.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. And in terms of this game, just to give a mention to Jordan Pickford, I thought he was very good again, made a couple of great saves down low to his right. In fact, you sent me a clip, there's a nice example as well, where he always wants the ball, which is Again, I guess it's quite a nice thing, certainly from a goalkeeper, to have that kind of confidence. Played a lovely ball, actually, nearly put the left winger in from memory. But again, I thought he was very solid in this game.
On to St James's Park, Newcastle 1, Brentford 0. So a classic Nick Pope save with his chest, which we've referenced many times on this podcast before. Just love to see those. But it was a chance for a first proper look, really, at Mark Flecken for the masses. An eventful day for him. Opinion was split, really, throughout on his performance. A really good first half save from Bruno Guimarães. And then the disallowed goal involving Callum Wilson and contact with consequence, which is the term the officials use in these circumstances. A few of these that we'll mention throughout the pod today. Don Goodman was the co-commentator on this one, and he said it wasn't the reason that Flecken didn't make that save. I would argue that perhaps it was the exact reason he didn't save it, but we'll get into that. And then there was the penalty. Don Goodman, again, very much thought that it was a penalty. Shea Given, surprisingly, was somewhere in the middle, but leaning towards it being a penalty. Alan Shearer, also surprisingly, thought it wasn't a penalty. And then Jamie Carragher, unsurprisingly, sitting opposite Thomas Frank on Monday Night Football, said that it wasn't a penalty. What do you say?
Yeah, it really frustrated me, this one, because, I mean, this is one where I just think he's been outsmarted. I mean, you can see the way that Anthony Gordon's gone into it. He's gone in to buy the penalty. You know, there's no real intent. He knows the ball's going out of play, and he's effectively run into Mark Flecken. And Mark Flecken's not made any real attempt to go for the ball, effectively just shepherding the ball out for a goal kick, which, if, again, an outfield player does that, shepherds it out, it's normally fine. So I'd lean towards it not being a penalty, but at the same time, it's, does he need to be quite that close? I think when you get to that point and you realise, okay, I'm not going to get to the ball first. And if he dives in and Gordon gets there first, toes it away, then of course it is a definite penalty. So you can see he's realised that and he's pulled out of the challenge completely. And then Anthony Gordon's run into him, which for me means it shouldn't be a penalty. At the same time, could he have maybe analysed it just a split second earlier and then just held back a touch more? And he could always then, if Anthony Gordon does get there before it gets to the byline, he can always then create a, you know, put a block technique in place or something so he stops any potential cross, and worst case, you give away a corner. But again, this all happens so, so quickly. And when your player's playing the ball back to you, naturally the first instinct is to go and get the ball. It was just that he realised the situation that split second too late, did the right thing, but I don't know, do we give credit to Anthony Gordon here that he's read the situation, he's run into the goalkeeper and he's bought a penalty? I know outfield players would. Like, for me, it frustrates me as a goalkeeper, but that's essentially what's happened. And certainly it looks a penalty when you see the way that he goes over him and he collides. But yeah, it's a tough situation for Flecken. It would just be that for me. If he could have just realised a split second earlier, maybe stayed in his feet, stayed a half a yard back, then that potentially nullifies the situation.
I think you do give credit to Gordon, to be fair. And Thomas Frank was quite transparent with that and said, I would say to my players to do exactly the same thing. Gordon isn't cheating there. He's just playing the game, and he's actually played the officials. So it's more on the officials than it is on Anthony Gordon. There was also the disallowed goal. Let's quickly talk about that, because Callum Wilson, after the game, was quick to call out goalkeepers for doing whatever they want at corners and pushing and pulling attackers around without any kind of comeback. And he said that he was doing exactly the same and the goal should have stood. What do you think?
Yeah, I think it's a foul. I just think that, credit to Wilson, and that he's quite subtle in his movements. And I think that, you know, some strikers maybe aren't quite as intelligent and they'll just run into the goalkeeper and it's a very obvious foul. I think for this, what he's done quite nicely, you can tell he knows the goalkeeper's there. He knows the goalkeeper's going to try and catch it, punch it. So he's just backed in enough, which has impeded Flecken enough to mean that he can't get a solid contact on the ball. So for that reason, I think it's a foul. I think from Flecken's point of view, you actually see just earlier in the footage that once the ball goes up, and by the way, this is a horrible, horrible ball for a goalkeeper to deal with. You know, when it's coming down vertically under the crossbar, people around you, so tough to catch this ball. I think we spoke about this recently, and tough to punch it as well, because you're 2 yards off your line. You're not going to get much leverage on a punch. You might get a few yards, if that. So it's a really, really tough situation to deal with. But you can see, as the ball's up in the air, he has a quick glance to see who's around him. And then at that point, comes to make his decision, and you can't really tell whether he's trying to catch it or punch it, but there is definitely a bit of contact with the left arm, which ultimately is the arm that he's going to go with and more than likely try and punch it, and for that reason it doesn't really go very far. It just looks very soft, and again, I think that's credit to Wilson. I think other days he might get away with this and it might be a goal because of how intelligent he is in the way in which he backs in, doesn't really show a lot in terms of intent to foul, but I do think just about it's the right decision.
Over to Molyneux, Wolves 1, Liverpool 3. Now, Jose Sarr had a good game here. A few good saves, one from Darwin Núñez that will flag. But in the 85th minute, the second goal for Liverpool was scored by Andrew Robertson. Now, he attempted, very good claim from the corner. He then attempted the quick release, which didn't quite work out. I don't know what you make of this, but I felt that he then didn't seem quite set as the ball came to Robertson in the area for him then to finish. What do you think?
Yeah, again, you pointed this out on the footage you sent me, and I didn't see this first time round, but as the ball's played out wide to Salah, I think you can see him sort of playing with his sock or something. What is quite interesting is, like you say, brilliant claim, goes to do the sidewinder, doesn't catch it. Straight away, he's then apologising to his teammates, whereas I think, yeah, I mean, look, it's a small point, but at that point, once you've done that, it is, of course, straight back into your goal, get focused, get set, you're speaking to the people around you, and you're ready for the next phase of play. So again, it's hard to know without being him ourselves as to whether he was fully focused in that moment. And in the end, it is a good finish ball in from Salah, and it's a lovely finish from Robertson, who continues his run. But certainly, obviously, once you've done that side volley, and again, all goalkeepers will appreciate this, you know, I've had it myself where bad kick, and all I'm thinking is do not score from this phase of play. Because you know that, of course, commentators, managers, whoever it might be, are going to look back on that kick, and that's what started this. Whereas it could have been so different. If he catches that kick correctly, then yeah, Wolves might be in the other end. So I think there's nothing wrong with the intent. The execution wasn't there. Then after that moment, again, any goalkeeper listening in, it is very much next phase of play. Get yourself right. Get everybody organised and be ready for the next bit of action. But yeah, unfortunately for him, Liverpool played it very well, and it is a lovely finish.
Those milliseconds of, because when that pass comes into the area for Robertson to finish and he's just slightly fiddling with his sock, that is a millisecond. Is that enough? Or am I reading too much into that? But is that enough to then just slightly put you out of sync?
Potentially. And again, it's one that is hard to, you know, comment on without being the goalkeeper themselves, because you'll know, and again, I can talk from personal experience in games where I'm fully focused, I'm connected to the game, I can see everything that's going to happen ahead of time, and then I've had times when I'm reactive and I'm not quite in the moment, and it might be little things, it might be something like a bad kick that then takes me out of the zone for that split second. So yeah, it's again hard to say without being him himself. Positionally, I think he's okay. I mean, I know there's the argument that he gets done down to his left, which is the near side, but I don't think he's positionally out of position. I think it's just one of them. It's a good ball in. It's a lovely finish. It's difficult to get down to that quickly enough. So, yeah, I certainly don't think there's an error in terms of the goal itself. I think had there have been a, you know, and there's classic examples from the past where, was it Jerzy Dudek? I think it was, wasn't it, against United from memory, where he's made an error. Then 2 minutes later, he's made an error again. I might have got the wrong goalkeeper here, but
Yes, it was Jerzy Diego Forlan.
Yeah, yeah. So there, and yeah, with that, and again, you know, we can't know for definite, but again, I know from personal experience, I've had that similarly where you do make an error, whether it's a bad kick, and then I'm not in the game, and then I make an error thereafter, and I can certainly look back and hold my hands up and say, yeah, I wasn't in the moment, I wasn't in the zone, I wasn't focused, I'd allowed a bad kick or a bad moment to get to me, and therefore, you know, the next action wasn't necessarily the best me. So it's hard to know, because then the goal that was scored wasn't an error, you know, it wasn't one that he then made a, you know, made a difficult decision or done something poor thereafter. So to know whether he was in the moment or in the zone in that particular instance is hard to say.
I think Alisson might be a good recent example as well. I think it was a game against City, wasn't it, in recent seasons, where he had a similar moment. But speaking of Alisson, certainly now this season, I mean, wow, just what a good goalkeeper this guy is, and some of his distribution and just his calmness at all times throughout the game is a pleasure to watch.
Yeah, well, it's interesting, because I watched this and I thought, if he loses the ball there, this is another example where commentators will be talking about, you know, goalkeepers thinking they're good with their feet, messing around, etc., etc. But this is a perfect example where he's gone to play, realised it wasn't quite the right play, so he's then done a bit of a Cruyff turn, I think, from memory, or whatever he's done to keep possession of the ball, and then he's just clipped a lovely ball into midfield. And that's the example. That then doesn't get pointed out on a positive. That's not the one where the commentators are like, oh, that's why they do it, you know, because all of a sudden he's changed what could have been a difficult situation into one where I think Liverpool from memory had a 3-on-3 and potentially score a goal. You know, we've seen so many examples this weekend of quality distribution. I know we're going to talk about, I think, Liam Robertson a bit, great ball, Louis Moulden in a bit has got an assist, where again, this quality distribution, these goalkeepers that are fantastic with their feet, what that's offering for a team moving forward is so, so important. So even if Alisson does get caught once this season doing that and looking to play like that, it's worth 10 times the amount of goals going forward. So I kind of hope that moments like that get picked out a little bit more, get spotted a little bit more, because it far outweighs the negative moments that we see every now and then.
And just when I thought Alisson was the number one Brazilian goalkeeper, because we do like to compare, don't we? We like to compare the two, Alisson and Edison. And I've always flip-flopped between the two. And after that game, I was like, right, yeah, Alisson, he's up there. He's the number one. And then we go over to the London Stadium later that day, West Ham 1, Man City 3. And Edison pulls off an absolute worldie at a very critical moment in the game from Kurt Zouma. And you think, right, okay, maybe they are just equal and they're forever going to be equal.
Yeah, huge save. And again, we talk so much about Edison, talk about his feet, but this is another big part of his game that probably gets overshadowed because of how good he is with his feet. But it's, yeah, big save, big mentality. He's a winner, ultimately. And again, you have to be if you're going to be playing for Pep Guardiola and playing in that City team. But that was a crucial, crucial moment. And that's not just a good save at 1-1 that we're over-exaggerating because, you know, at the timing of the game. Now, this is a top, top save. The power that he's got, and he is such a powerful guy, the power he's got, good footwork, full stretch to his left, fingertips around the post, just a brilliant save. And in the end, that'll probably get overshadowed to an extent because City score a couple more goals, win the game. But it's those kind of moments that could soon turn a 3-1 win into a 2-1 defeat if he doesn't make that save.
Alphonse Areola at the other end, 12 saves in this game, a prolonged triple save, we'll call it, in the first half, and continually thwarted Erling Haaland in this one. Unfortunately, conceding, I think, 5 minutes from time, he nearly prevented him from scoring. It's very difficult to do so, of course. But again, as the number one this season, he's looking good.
Really good. Do you know what? And the more that we're seeing of him, and I know, and had this conversation recently, can't think who it was with, but about the whole dynamic of one and two. And obviously we've had a shift here, you know, with Fabianski now shifting to the two. And you always get that initial period of time where it's a bit difficult. You've got your mainstay who's come out the team. There'll be a few people questioning, should Fabianski play? But then over time, providing the goalkeeper does well enough, which Areola certainly is, and everything I've seen of him this season has been really, really impressive, it soon just becomes as it is. And then it settles into that one and two, you know. And so I know we spoke about, feels like it's been our main topic of conversation, I think, so far this year on the pod, or this season on the pod. But then it can settle down quite quickly in that, yeah, if Areola keeps doing what he's doing, at some point, and it might have happened already, Fabianski settles into that two role. He knows he's more than ready to step in if needed, but also at the same time, you know, gives credit, and I'm sure he does, and they've got a great relationship, but gives credit to the number one and understands exactly why they are getting their opportunity. And again, Areola, I thought in this game, so many sharp saves. You mentioned a few of the saves there, but I just think, again, another goalkeeper that's really, really powerful, moves so well. The save he made up to his right, he actually made look reasonably comfortable, I think, but again, just good footwork, gets himself into the right position, so explosive, quick reactions. Yeah, he looks very, very good.
And just to finish up in the Premier League, Jason Steele in for Bart Verbruggen, as we mentioned at the top there, and Jamie Carragher pulling out his distribution on Monday Night Football. I thought a nice bit of analysis from Carragher on how Steele's distribution changed at the weekend compared to what he'd done in the two games prior that he played for Brighton this season. And over at the Vitality, Bournemouth 0, Chelsea 0. And the Goalkeepers Union seemingly not at force here. Neto conveniently just fiddling about with his captain's armband as he walked down the tunnel at the ground, perhaps reading too much into this, but completely ignoring Robert Sanchez, who, by the way, was given MOM for Chelsea in that game, doing well as the number one for the Blues.
Yeah, and I wanted to touch on this because statistically, and again, I know we talk a lot about the stats, some good, some not so good, but statistically, he's doing brilliantly this season, Rob Sanchez. Yet, you know, I follow a lot of the various news, the various articles that come out, and you can sense that the narrative that surrounds Robert Sanchez isn't particularly positive. Now, I don't know whether that's because of Chelsea as a whole at the moment, that they're in this sort of transitional period. They haven't really got going yet. And people questioning some of the signings, whether they're upgrades or downgrades in certain positions. But I can sense that it's not particularly positive. I watched a lot of his games this season, and I've been really, really impressed with him. You know, I know we spoke about him a lot probably this time last year on the podcast. And at that time, you know, regular at Brighton, playing some fantastic games. He's got everything, great shape, size, moves well, can distribute well, aerially so strong, just comes for everything. Yet I see so many of his positive actions not necessarily getting the credit they deserve. So I was pleased for him in this game, in that I do feel that, you know, he did get some credit. Certainly the save he made down to his right, where he's come right across the goal, moved so quickly, so brave in his action to go and make the save that he made. And as I say, I really hope for him that this starts to shift that narrative that just, for me anyway, seems to be sat there at the moment.
It is the EFL overview, and starting in the Championship, where Cardiff came out on top in the South Wales derby. But it took something special to beat Swansea's Carl Rushworth. Yaku Mate twice denied by the on-loan Brighton man, who showed good hands in the first half and a strong hand in the second. Senny Dieng prevented Sammy Smodics from grabbing a hat-trick in Blackburn's win over miserable Middlesbrough. Should he, however, have been penalised for conceding a penalty? That's the second of the aforementioned incidents we mentioned in the previous segment with Mark Flecken. The fact that he wasn't meant Ainsley Pearce's touch wide from Lewis O'Brien's late effort was just as crucial as it was excellent. Even nicer to do it against his old club too. Conor Hazard continues his bid to become the most mentioned stopper on a losing side in this season's EFL overview. Riveting reactions to keep out Preston's Milutin Osmadjic, but not enough as Plymouth fell to the home side, spurred on by more heroics from their number one, Freddie Woodman. His brilliant block was mirrored by Alex Palmer, who salvaged a point for West Brom at Bristol City. Dan Backman was at the double to keep Watford in a game they eventually snatched all 3 points from against Birmingham. And Davies Vasquez carried on his fine form for Sheffield Wednesday, despite a home defeat to Ipswich.
Indeed, where to start? Yeah, Vasquez I want to give a mention to, because I feel like I'm hearing his name a lot. Again, a goalkeeper we're not overly accustomed with or don't know too much about. But I'm aware this is one that was very much the goalkeeper coach that's gone in at Sheffield Wednesday, Italian goalkeeper coach, obviously knows Italian football. And Vasquez coming from AC Milan was a little bit of an unusual one, in that ordinarily you've seen, and we've seen it again this summer in the Championship, it will be a lot of goalkeepers that move around the Championship. It's not all that often you see lads coming in from abroad and getting that opportunity. But huge credit to him. Everything I've seen of him, he looks like he's top goalkeeper. A couple of brilliant saves in this, really sharp. Again, someone that looks very, very dynamic. But yeah, big performance in this despite the loss. Jack Anik, you mentioned, obviously big time for him, really, coming into this season. Initially as a two behind Ryan Allsopp, been all sorts of change at Cardiff, but the games that he's played to this point have just been fantastic. And again, just to continue that with a clean sheet, a good save in this, good punch as well, very, very good punch, came a long way, and certainly he's carrying on his fine form. And as you mentioned at the other end, I feel a bit for Carl Rushworth. They're having a really, really tough time as a team. Obviously his first taste of Championship football, but again in this game made a couple of big stops, the one from distance in particular. And again, goalkeepers that will have faced this type of shot where there's no real spin on the ball, it's moving all over the place, having to watch it the whole way and react and get a good hand on it, which he did. I thought this was a top save. I wanted to mention the Ainsley Pearce save as well, because I thought this was excellent. This is going right in the corner. Again, vital save, vital time, struck with real power. And I thought the movement to get across to his left, get the smallest of fingertips, but that's all it needed to get it round the post. But I thought this was certainly a match-winning save. And in terms of Dieng, oh, actually, I will just mention Conor Hazard, because, yeah, again, one of the saves of the weekend, this point blank, movement across the goal, managed to give himself just enough room. This is the bit that impressed me about this particular save, is that as he's moved across the goal, he's almost stepped back a touch onto his goal line just to give him some reaction time. You know, he can't come for the cross, but what he did in terms of his footwork and the reaction to make the save at the far post was phenomenal. Made a lovely save just before that as well, onto the post, little fingertip onto the post down to his right, and certainly keeping up his fine form. But yeah, the Senny Dieng one, for me, not a penalty. I mean, he's made the first save, couldn't quite hold it, went to get the second. There's no intent to foul. The intent is to go and get the ball or make a block. Now, I know the counter argument can be that if you don't get there, that, you know, does that then constitute a foul? For me, I kind of feel like they both meet 50-50 and the ball then breaks. For me, not a foul, but again, probably similar to the one we spoke about where the Flecken one was given a foul for him. It is one that's probably 60-40. You know, it wouldn't have surprised me at the same time had the ref given it.
And the third, then, of those aforementioned incidents, there was one in the game between Millwall and Leeds. Ian Melier on Tom Bradshaw. This was given as a foul on Melier. It was goalless at the time between the two teams. What's your take on that one?
Yeah, this for me is probably the clearest of the three, I think, in terms of foul. I just think that Bradshaw's coming in across him, isn't going to win the ball, has contact with Melier. Melier catches this ball with no, you know, with no contact. So for me, I do think it's a foul. Again, doesn't look great, and you're going to get the usual comments, oh, goalkeeper needs to be stronger, goalkeeper's getting overprotected, etc. But I do feel that the run and the collision, the contact, is enough for him to drop the ball. So this, for the, out of the three, for me, would be the clearest.
Okay, so just to clarify, Flecken, you're saying no pen.
Yep.
Dieng, you're saying no pen.
Yeah.
And Melier, you're saying was fouled.
Yeah.
Okay, that's what I expected. That's fine. That's what I expected.
Are you surprised by that at all? No, look, I try and be as objective. I know that maybe I am ever so slightly biased towards the goalkeepers, but no, if I was to give a percentage to each, let's do it that way. So I would say Flecken, for me, I understand it. So I'm going to say 60% no foul. In terms of Melier, I'm going to say 90% foul. And Dieng, I'd say 60% no foul.
I agree, by the way. Although Dieng, I'd probably say 70-80% no foul, to be honest with you. But yeah, I'm with you. And one more question for you before we move on from the Championship, Richard. What is a reflex compass?
I heard this term. That was within his reflex compass. I mean, you've got to save anything within your arc or within your reflex compass.
It's a new one. I'm liking this. This could be a whole new segment of the podcast, that we have a new term each week.
Yeah, who's got beaten within their reflex compass? Yes, we'll name and shame.
So this was Don Goodman in the game between Southampton and Leicester City. So Ryan Fraser had a shot on goal that was well saved by Mads Hermansson, who we'll also talk about in a moment, actually. But Don Goodman, yes, said that it was within Hermansson's reflex compass.
Well, there you go. I think we should just make up some new terms that hopefully we can get to stick, you know, because again, talking about innovators earlier on and people that set the trend, we'll get mocked initially for some of our terms. But if we come up with something, we just keep saying it until other people start to say it. Maybe we can create some goalkeeping terms.
On Hermansson, good goalkeeper, very good goalkeeper, very assured, very composed. But watching that game, it did just make me think again about the dynamic at Leicester City. Now, you can correct me here if anything's happened since the window, but if we look at Leicester, and it's staggering to look at Leicester, you've got your number one, who's Mads Hermansson. You've got your number two at the moment, who seems to be Jakub Stolarczyk. Now, injuries might be playing a part in this, but then you've got Dan Iverson, Danny Ward, Alex Smithies. Who's the number three at Leicester? Who's the recognised number three?
It's a crazy situation. I'm led to believe that Alex Smithies is injured at the moment, but I don't believe the other two are. Who both, by the way, played a lot of Premier League football last season. I don't know. I mean, I've got to be careful what I say because, again, each club has different strategies when it comes to recruitment, players in, players out. And ordinarily, you would assume that if you're bringing in someone that you consider to be your number one, which they obviously have, and they've got Stolarczyk as the number two, seemingly, then it would be very much a case of, right, what's the best case situation for the likes of Danny Ward and Iverson? And I'm sure that as a Championship club, to have them as a number three and four on the type of salaries they're on makes no sense. So really, really bizarre to me. And I know they've got situations lower down as well. Got Brad Young, you know, top young goalkeeper they paid money for, who's still in the building. I know there's a lot of interest in him in the summer, but wasn't allowed to move out. So in terms of strength in depth, they have by far got the strongest goalkeeping community, the strongest goalkeeping department, I think, in the entire world at the moment. It's, yeah, incredibly bizarre.
Into League One. Cheltenham Town still without a single league goal this season. Now, this may change as of tonight, this being recorded on the morning of their midweek trip to Peterborough, but they cannot keep relying on Luke Southwood to bail them out of games. Tries he might, with an awesome double save from Exeter's Ryan Trevitt and Dimitri Mitchell. The Robins remain winless as the home side grabbed a 68th minute winner. Max Stryek may be clad in an awful ensemble at Wickham. A terrible kit, this one. They are prone to terrible kits at Wickham, but it shan't deter him from making very decent saves. The ease, Ollie Casey and Sonny Carey prevented by the pole, and Liam Roberts on loan at Barnsley from Middlesbrough. One word, zingerling.
Zingerling. There you go. That could be the term. Yeah. Although I kind of feel like that's sort of already out there a little bit, but maybe if we just keep saying it, that it'll become more of a term. I don't know. But no, Luke Southwood, again, talk about feeling for a goalkeeper in that he's been superb this season. And the double save he's made here, the reaction for the first one, down low to his left for the second one. I think they had 9 or 10 shots on target against him, and he kept it down to one. And actually, the defensive record for Cheltenham's not bad. And again, huge credit. I've got no doubt, and I haven't seen the stats actually for League One, but I'm sure that Luke Southwood will be up there, because the amount of saves he's making in each game, yet they're only averaging maybe 1.2, 1.3 goals against a game. So, you know, ordinarily that might be a playoff team potentially, but yeah, when you haven't scored a single goal the other end, then it's going to be very difficult. But yeah, well done to him, and hopefully things do turn for them soon. And yeah, Max Stryek, I mean, two good saves down to his left, one sort of mid-height. This would be the one that a commentator would no doubt say is a good height for a goalkeeper, but I thought it was a fantastic save. Again, so powerful, mid-left, moves well, really, really explosive. And Liam Roberts, you mentioned it there. I mean, again, he's been highlighted a lot on the show the last few weeks, but this time for his distribution, not one of his top-handed, top-corner saves. This was, yeah, just a lovely ball, just a really cultured left foot into the striker. Hasn't gone above knee height the whole way. And of course, striker brings it down, turns, puts the other lad in, and they score a goal. And again, just that real detail in the distribution. Just an excellent pass.
And finally, in League Two, Owen Goodman, another of the lone crew coming out to you at Colchester from Crystal Palace. Really good save to push James Gale's effort wide as Colew drew with Mansfield. Always up and looking for the quick rollout to Goodman, like that. And a quick word on Mark Oxley of Harrogate. Kept Bradford at bay all game, and then right at the last made a decision to come for a free kick. It ended up in an equaliser. Right decision or wrong decision?
Yeah, well, I mean, obviously when the ball ends up in the net, naturally it's easy to say wrong decision. I think the one with this, and I do want to mention the fact he'd had such a top game, whether the adrenaline's flowing and he's coming for everything and he feels, yeah, we've all had it as a goalkeeper, you feel invincible. Just with this one in particular, the ball never really had much height on it and it was still quite a way out. And again, I'll always admire and appreciate goalkeepers for being proactive, being positive, wanting to come and affect the game, which he certainly was trying to do here. In hindsight, I'm sure he looks at this again and it just never quite got to the height where he's able to get above the heads of strikers. And there's always that worry that when you're coming for the ball that's that little bit lower, that someone can just nick in front of you and just get that glancing header, which is what happened here. So yeah, no doubt one that he'll be a bit frustrated by, certainly given the good work earlier in the game.
Clean Sheet Club. Okay, Matthew, it is time for this.
That's right, it's Clean Sheet Club, and we start in the Premier League. Bernd Leno, no bridges cindered. Nick Pope, off the ropes. Neto, you betto. Rob Sanchez, Barmy Army. Into the Championship, Max O'Leary, bathing in blanks. Alex Palmer, on the board in 23-24. Lee Nichols, Mark II. Angus Gunn, sharp saver. Vaclav Kladky, very much back in the game. Dan Backman, got the horn. Jack Anik, Mark III. Ilian Melier, double bubble. Into League One, Liam Roberts, hat-trick. Viliami Sinsalo, back-to-back. James Beadle, away improvement. Connor Ripley, talented mister. Matthew Cox, Mark IV. Max Stryek, doubling up. And into League Two, Aidan Stone, not so problem. Murphy Mahoney, 3-4. And Mark Howard, unbeaten.
Very good, Richard. Very good as always. You're getting better at that, Richard, aren't you? Very good.
Yeah, I'm getting to know you more, unfortunately.
So, a few more bits. The table, not yet. Of course, we said after 10 games, I might bring that forward to 7 because the excitement is just too much for us to not mention the table with each week. But we are going to have the first one of these for the season. Yes, the goalkeeper klaxon, Richard. The goalkeeper assist klaxon. Louis Maldon, who you mentioned earlier, drilling one for Tyree Sinclair to latch onto and finish well in Rochdale's 4-2 triumph over Barnet. Loved this.
Yeah, this was a lovely, lovely pass. It's just a trajectory on the ball. It's essentially, you can look at it first glance and it's a kick down field, but actually you can see that he spots the runner and it's just such a lovely ball. You couldn't have placed it any better. It's gone about 70 yards. It's gone probably just over head height the whole way, straight into the striker's path. Real difficult one for the opposing goalkeeper. Is it going to come all the way through? Can I come? Can I stay? Ends up coming some of the way, and it's a lovely finish, in fairness, from the striker. But yeah, lovely, lovely ball from Louis Maldon.
You're right that he did spot it because he was waiting and he even gesticulated, didn't he, to say, lads, I've got nothing on. And then suddenly you could see that he spotted it and instantly delivered that pass. And what else I liked about this one was that you can hear the crowd. I don't know whether you heard the crowd, but the Barnet fans, as Louis Maldon is preparing to distribute, the Barnet fans start that classic chant of, you know, oh, North London is wonderful. North London is wonderful. It's full of, you know, two very nice things, and Barnet, Old North London. And at that moment, Sinclair latches on, lobs the keeper. Yeah! Just brilliant timing.
Yeah, love it, love it. And he's certainly started the season really well for them. Really interesting National League this season, actually. Some high-scoring games, some really interesting games.
And if we're going to have the first goalkeeper assist klaxon of the season, we might as well have the first one of these for the season.
Bada boom, bada bing. It's only a keeper, keeper.
Bailey Peacock Farrell. Now, we feel for him. Of course we do. On loan at Aarhus in Denmark. Not because of the fact that he's on loan at Aarhus in Denmark, but because of this particular moment. In a game, 22 minutes into their clash with Bromby. He's had a little slip and then he's, well, Richard, yeah, take it away.
Yeah, he's done exactly what I think all of us would have done. It's one of those horrible moments in that, all under control, he's going to clear the ball or play out, whatever he does. And certainly, by the way, he started really well there at Aarhus, has to be said. And, you know, I know we spoke about this before, quite an interesting move. No doubt could have gone to the championships, decided to go top end Denmark, started really well. Ball's come back to him and he's just slipped. And then at that moment, the ball can go anywhere. It could go, you know, for a corner, could hit the post and go somewhere else. No, it hits the post, goes straight into the striker's path, and he's then got an open goal to tap it into. Now, what do you do in this situation? And I think we all do what he did, which is just grab the striker. Just grab the striker. At least then it's not a goal. So I feel for him because the slip is what it is and it's just killed him. And then you're left with a decision. Do you let the guy just tap it in or do you do a rugby tackle? And I think 99% of us would have done the rugby tackle.
It's so funny. Can't stop watching it. It's just brilliant. Just that instant reflex. Get down.
Yeah, indeed. Yeah, frustrated one for him. But as I said, I'd love to know. We should put this out on Twitter. Not Twitter, is it anymore? It's X, isn't it? But we should put this out and actually see what would you do in this situation. And I can guarantee that most people are doing exactly the same thing.
And as a third, if we're going to have the first klaxon and the first keeper capers, we might as well also have the first, Richard, text talk of the season. So, Rocco Rees of Worthing in the National League South. It was the FA Cup second qualifying round at the weekend. Worthing were playing Eastbourne Borough. They were 1-0 up. It was late in the game. Rees saved low to his left, only to see the ball divert to Eastbourne striker Zach Emerson. Emerson just has to nod it in, but Rees leaps like a salmon to make that second save and then has the awareness to pour away the loose ball before Emerson can tap in the rebound. Incredible scenes. And before I get your reaction to it, we are going to hear from Mr. Rees himself.
Hi, it's Rocco Rees here from Worthing. I want to talk you through my save on Saturday versus Eastbourne Borough in the FA Cup. We were 1-0 up and it was about the 90th minute, so it was late on. And I was having one of them games where nothing could get past me, so every time someone's around the box, I was already thinking, like, no one's scoring past me today. So it was one of them games. And they've cut in from the right. He's kind of shaped up. He's cutting from the right, kind of shaped up as if he's going to, like, whip it across to the far side. So I've set, he's drilled it low and hard to the near post side. I've got down fast and we're playing on Astro, so it's kind of bobbly. It's bounced in front of me. I've got a touch onto it, it's hit the post. I don't know if it was already hitting the post, it may have been creeping in, and it's bounced out into like the middle of the 6 yard box. And I was on the floor at the time, and as I've saved it, I've looked up, the striker's literally about to head it. It was just a natural reaction, and the save happened. Yeah, so I'm on the floor, he's headed it, and I've just got up as quickly as I can and just step and dive straight away. Managed to get, I got a strong hand, and then it's popped out again in the third one. Just a quick reaction, just to punch it away, and taken a volley from the striker. Yeah, it felt good, and it was one of my best performances to date. So yeah, I was really happy with it, and the support for the save has been crazy. So yeah, cheers.
So that was Rocco Rees kindly doing that for us first thing in the morning. As he said there, the attention he's had over social media has been quite emphatic, quite overwhelming, I'd imagine. But still a young goalkeeper, is now permanently at Worthing, having spent a bit of time on loan there back in the day. He was originally at Brighton with the likes of Carl Rushworth. He then moved on to Brentford, has now dropped into non-league with the hope, of course, to restarting his career and getting back where he belongs. Still young, in his early 20s, and if he continues to make saves like this, it certainly will do his cause no harm.
Yeah, save like this. Well, first and foremost, I'm just going to go with cool, calm and collected. That's it, you know. Don't need to get too excited. It's the whole, I think we've said this before, you're never as good as they say you are, you're never as bad as they say you are. You're somewhere in the middle, so just stay nice, cool, calm and collected. And no, this, and I'm not surprised this has gone viral, because just an unbelievable save. As you say, the AstroTurf's always going to cause a bit of an issue, and certainly those kind of that first one that's fired in and it's skipping off the Astro, it's so hard to actually read the bounce, gets the tip onto the post, but it's just the recovery. And again, goalkeepers work on this day in, day out, like how quickly can you get back up. And this is a great situation where this is a, you know, it's a match winning unbelievable save, because it looks in all the way, and how he's managed to generate the power from the floor to get himself up, to not only get the hand to it, which he did, but he's almost controlled it to an extent, because then the follow-up again should be a simple tap in from that point, but he manages to get a big fist away as well. It's just artistic, that's what I'm going to say. It's just artistic to actually do what he did, so much involved in this particular play. And yeah, I'd like to think this will not just go viral for now, but I think this will be there for quite some time.
Good stuff, Richard. Okay, that is us. Before we go, just to say, Steve Harper, the former Newcastle goalkeeper and current academy director, Newcastle have said that he's recovering well in hospital after suffering a subarachnoid hemorrhage. So that is a type of stroke caused by bleeding on the surface of the brain. Steve, we are thinking of you, the Goalkeepers Union here, especially Richard Lee, of course, who you mimicked once by forward rolling in a penalty shootout. That's correct, isn't it?
I did, indeed. And I did drop him a text. He did respond and said that he is recovering well. So that is good to hear.
Good stuff. Richard, thank you.
Matthew, thank you.
This has been the Goalkeepers Union podcast, Between the Sticks, Keepers
Away.